Dum Dum away! 0011 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001
Welcome to Screen Review Time Warp. I'm Tyson.
And I'm Andrew.
And I'm Zach.
And this is the podcast where we want to look at everything TV and movies. And the way we've decided to structure this is that we've thought about it in a bit of a time machine point of view. So the idea is that we, first of all, we're going to take something that we've watched from the past. So something that we've seen that's old or maybe, you know, somewhat recent or something we've revisited. And we see what it's all about and see what we liked about it, if it's held up the test of time. And then we come forward into the present. The present is something that we've seen recently, something that's on at the movies, something that is present. And again, we're going to break it down. That's going to be our longest section. We'll spend the most time talking about that. And lastly, we look into the future and we look at a trailer or some news of something that is coming out. And we see if we, you know, what we like about it or if we're excited or if we think it's a bad idea and just generally kind of discuss all that. So, first of all, we have the past. The past, something we've watched again recently. So, what have we seen? What did we like?
Well, and this is Zach talking, by the way. I recently watched for the first time The Fly.
Ooh.
1986.
So we're not talking the old 1950s one, no?
Yeah, no, not that one. It was a remake. So this was directed by David Cronenberg, who he's an interesting fellow. It starred Jeff Goldblum as the title character.
Yeah.
Also had Gina Davis as his love interest. So basically, what the plot of this is, it revolves around Jeff Goldblum's erratic scientist. Basically, he's developing some sort of teleportation device where he can teleport from one spot to the other.
Yep.
And one after testing it on animals, he starts to test it on himself. And what happens is, when he is teleporting, a fly sneaks into the teleportation device. And what happens, and this is non-spoilers, by the way, is basically the genes of the fly meshes with Jeff Goldblum.
Yep.
And he slowly descends into a giant man-fly hybrid.
Yeah.
Mm. Classic.
I have seen this, and it's out there.
It's so weird.
It's so
yeah.
out there.
It's so just Jeff Goldblum being Jeff Goldblum as well. I feel like he plays he plays the same just character. Oh, he just plays every character the same, I feel like.
Yeah.
What I liked about it was very engaging. Like, it was written so well. For a movie that was made in 1986, just the characters and the story, like, I was interested. I really wanted to see what was happening next. And what was awesome is throughout the film, spoilers,
We should actually take this opportunity to say, because I missed at the start, generally everything we are going to talk about on this podcast, there's going to be spoilers. So if you are choosing to listen to this, especially in the present section where we're talking about something that is out at the movies already, we will be making some spoilers in that. So carry on, Zach.
Mm. But what's really good is you start off seeing Jeff Goldblum as an everyday, you know, scientist. You know, he's a bit...
struggling.
He's struggling. He meets Gina Davis, you know, kind of falls in love. And throughout the film, you really do see him descend into this kind of giant man-fly hybrid.
Yeah.
All it does is it shows his mental state just gone from a scientist just descending into a fly and dealing with, like turning into a fly.
Like pure animalistic.
Oh, yeah. It's just turning into it and how to deal with it. And Gina Davis all at the same time is trying to help him. But she's like, what do I do? He's turning into a fly.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it's like, oh, am I pregnant with a child or something like that? It's like all these different questions that come from it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to reveal some ignorance. The only real thing I've seen of The Fly is I know about the original, and I know that The Simpsons basically did a Treehouse of Horror about the whole thing.
Gotcha, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it presented as a really serious...
Yeah.
I'd say so,
sci-fi?
Yeah. Very serious.
I'm going to go about 80% serious.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting, because it just, I don't know, even in, did you say it was 1986?
Yes.
Mm. That still seems like, I don't know, it'd be a hard pill to swallow to say, yes, I'm turning into a fly.
Well, apparently, it was a huge success. My mum and dad said when they went to go see it back in the 80s, it was like, it's what everyone was seeing.
Wow.
So you went to go see The Fly because it was the big hit in 1986.
And it was such a slow burn, but such a satisfying slow burn, because you see Jeff Goldblum just descend. You just see, the main point I'm trying to make here is just seeing that descension into the fly the whole way through.
Yeah.
It's not like oh, experiment happened, you know, he's all good. Next day, bam, he's the fly.
Yeah.
So I think you really see him. Yeah.
So slowly descending, a man going from being normal to animalistic.
Yeah.
Overdriven.
Yeah.
Schizo.
Yeah.
Out of it, you can see him coming out of his skin, which eventually he does come out of his skin.
Yeah.
He's transforming into a fly. He looks like a fly.
Oh, right? Man. The creature design. Yeah. And the prosthetics and the makeup is outstanding.
I realized as soon as I said, you know, animalistic, I realized that's something that's just fairly standard anyway. Like that happened with the Amazing Spider-Man 2 with the Doc Connors and the lizard.
Yeah.
He was turning into a lizard, so.
Yeah,
number one, sorry.
My bad. Number one, of course.
It's all good.
You got one job, Tyson.
Oh, gosh. There's so many Spider-Man films I need to keep track of.
That's very true. But, so that's what I watched recently. Great watch. It gets real hectic towards the end.
Towards the end, it's just like
it's surprisingly like because David Cronenberg is notoriously quite a full on director. There's a lot of content in his films which are quite confronting.
What else has he done?
Good question.
That is a good question. He's done. He really was at his peak, kind of. I'd say around the 80s.
Okay.
90s.
Sorry, I'm throwing a bit on the spot here.
No,
but
it's all good.
I'm trying to put in a bit of perspective if I know any of his other stuff. Because I haven't seen The Fly as the only thing I've seen.
I forced myself to watch it a couple of months ago, and I was like, I'm not seeing it. Mum and Dad spoke about it, so I'm like, I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
And it's a good movie, but towards the end, it's just like, this is too much.
He's very...
It just needs to end.
Yeah. As a director, David Cronenberg's very different.
Yeah.
Like, his films deal with... They're just different films. They're not like your typical like dramas or thrillers. They're very out there.
He doesn't have one set genre.
No.
You know, one minute he'll be doing The Fly, and next he'll be doing a romantic. It's like, you have no set you're doing.
So he really kind of rose to prominence during the 80s where you had a lot of VHS horror type films. VHS horror. Those type of films. So you got Scanners. I'm not sure if you know that one. I know that one because a guy had... blows up, also like Videodrome, The Dead Zone, also done more recent films such as Crash from 1996, A History of Violence 2005.
Ooh, no,
A History of Violence?
Yeah, that's like Viggo Mortensen, yeah.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Mm.
All right.
That's actually a good film as
well. Love History of Violence.
A Dangerous Method, he did in 2011 with Keira Knightley and Michael Fassbender.
Is that where he's a psychologist? Or
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It was a bit, a bit too much of the old talkity talk.
The old chit chat.
Yeah.
There you go.
But critics love his films because they're just, he's just different.
So question, does it stand up to like the test of time? Like, do you feel that watching, even though it was made in 1986, so we're talking like 30 years ago now.
Yeah.
Is it still good? Is it still worth watching?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, it was the first time I'd watched the film and I was completely like engaged. I was like, I know The Fly. I want to watch it.
Yeah.
I watched it. I'm like, wow, this is awesome. Like the characters are written very well, very engaging story. And there's only about like Jeff Goldblum and Jenna Davis are the main characters. And then you've got about 1 to 2 side characters and that's about it.
Yeah.
So it's very small in terms of characters. So that allows for more room of character development.
Yeah.
Of Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis, which it does and it benefits the film very well.
Oh, yeah.
But that is The Fly. Would highly recommend.
All right. There you go. Well, I decided recently to rewatch The Matrix.
Oh, yes.
And The Matrix. Now, I have very fond memories of The Matrix. I didn't actually see it when it first came out.
What?
I know. It was one of those movies. I don't really know why or why not, but I missed it. Obviously went back and watched it before Reloaded and Revolutions and everything like that.
That's good.
Now, it is still brilliant.
It still holds up.
Very
like,
good.
It's 18 years old now.
Oh my goodness.
That's 18 years old. It's rated number 18 on IMDb's top movies of all time.
Don't blame it.
Yeah.
And I would agree with that. I think it was groundbreaking
at the time, man.
It was groundbreaking at the time, and it's still, those themes are still really, really good. Now, one thing, or really, really prominent, I should say, one thing that I think actually kind of benefited the whole movie was, now, I don't know about you, but when I think The Matrix, the whole series, I think CGI.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think the bullets and bending backwards and Neo, and figuring it all out, and you know, especially that bit where he flexes and the whole room waves away from it. That's the first image that comes into my mind when we say The Matrix. I'm just like, you don't see that anywhere else.
No,
you know.
Well, I basically looked at it expecting to see lots of CGI and thinking that it was going to be really dated, because you look at even CGI of like something that was groundbreaking. Let's take an example. Like, now, as much as the Star Wars prequel series was a horrible story for the most part, it was groundbreaking CGI at the time.
At the time.
Now, you look back on it now and you look at that CGI and you're like, oh my goodness, this looks like cardboard cutouts.
Yeah.
And I was expecting the same thing to happen with because it's a similar time period. I think Star Wars Episode 1 was also 99.
Same year. Yeah, 99, yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
I think so. Maybe we can double check that.
Yeah, I'll confirm.
But yeah, so I was expecting to look really dated, and I was surprised because actually a lot of their effects are actually practical effects.
Yeah.
It's things like green screen, which you know, can look dated, but especially considering they're kind of trying to pitch the real world as this digital backdrop anyway, or this fake backdrop. It fits even the parts where you're like, oh, you know, you can see that it's a bit not off, but you can see that, you know, they've used that. It fits it really well. Yeah, and then things like, let's take the bullet time. Mm. That's actually done with cameras. So it's not a computer generated scene. It's all done with real cameras. Yeah. So basically, for those who aren't familiar, the way they shot bullet time is depending on whether it's a moving image or a still image. Basically, they had a camera and then they had a ring of still image cameras that basically all went off at the same time, and it meant that you could essentially cycle through all those frames of the still cameras, and essentially it would freeze time with, you know, Trinity in the air and all that. But yeah, it's all like, it's wire work and it's all practical effects. Yeah. And so when you go back and rewatch it, it still looks incredible.
Yeah, it still looks incredible.
And the other thing that I think is, I think it stands up so well because the cinematographer who, or the main director of photography, Bill Pope, he shot that thing amazingly. Like, the scenes are just composed so well. You've got great use of symmetry. You've got really good use of the Dutch angle, which is where you turn the camera on an angle. So, I think of the scene where it's Agent Smith in the subway, and, like, the subway is just this diagonal line going up from corner to corner.
Yeah.
And it all fits it so, so well. There's lots of varied shots as well.
Yeah.
They use color... color grading really well, where they've got the real world is blue and then the Matrix is green, and then you look at like the sparring program and it's all quite yellow, and they've done it so well, so that you can, even those subtle subconscious things, you notice that the Matrix is green, and so it looks slightly different. And the other thing I'll say, their fight scenes
very good.
Are outstanding. They put a lot of time into training everyone in Kung Fu.
Yep.
Something that a recent Marvel Netflix series did not do. And I think it really shows. You've got, instead of like a scene where it's, you know, a shot and a shot and a shot and a shot, you've got a scene of, you know, Keanu Reeves fighting Hugo Weaving, and it's like a good 10-second long shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, oh, it's brilliant. It's so, so well done.
Did you know that Neo, they wanted Will Smith
to be there,
and then they wanted Morpheus to be Sean Connery.
Sean Connery. Can you imagine how different that series would be with Will Smith as Neo and Sean Connery as Morpheus? Like,
that would have been...
Well, it would just change the dynamic of the film so much. Yeah,
but do you think it would have been successful? As successful?
Yes.
Yeah, it would have been critically. Yes. I still would have thought...
Don't get me wrong,
like commercial.
Keanu Reeves
and Lawrence Fishburne, still outstanding, still stands the test of time. That relationship and that dynamic is unbelievable.
Mm.
But then when you think of like what Will Smith could have delivered and what Sean Connery could have delivered, it's just a whole nother movie.
It is.
See, I reckon, now tell me if you agree on this. I think Sean Connery as Morpheus, I reckon that could have worked. I reckon, offense to Lawrence Fishburne, you're great, but I think Sean Connery could have replaced you in the same way.
Yeah.
I really don't think Will Smith could have replaced Keanu Reeves. And here's my reason. All right, hang on. Keanu Reeves has that very spaced out innocence to him. Like when he gets pulled out of the Matrix, he's very like, whoa, I don't know. And
legitimately,
I'm not saying that Will Smith couldn't do that, but I've never seen him do that.
Well, what roles has he had to do that in? Keanu Reeves didn't have the roles to do that in, did he?
Well, I mean, he's got the the stoner
Point Break.
Kind of
thing. Yeah. Point Break, Bill and Ted.
Yeah, from Bill and Ted and things like that. I think Keanu Reeves actually really made the Neo character.
It's a more woulda, coulda, shoulda. We'll never know.
Yeah,
he could have delivered.
Will? Sorry, not that.
We're punny on this podcast.
Oh, man.
It's just different dynamics. Will Smith is obviously an extremely different actor to Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
Will Smith, I feel like, at that time, that would have been peak time for him. Hey, he's doing Bad Boys. He's got Wild West coming up. Like
Wild West.
Well, that's the time where he stated like it was all about the money for me. So I think at that time, maybe it just would have been such different dynamic. I feel like
what I'd pay to see that movie.
Can I also say again as well the code, the Matrix code in that that still looks amazing.
Yeah, it still looks very amazing. I mean, when I think Matrix, I actually think manga and anime. The amount of influence the Wachowskis had from mangas and anime, such as Ghost in the Shell, Akira, is that what it's called?
Akira,
my bad. They've gone out and stated the amount of inspiration they took from that, and you can, I think, see it heavily, like in the kung fu fight scenes.
Oh, yeah.
And just the overall, I think, kind of storytelling of it as well.
Yeah.
Very, and just the dystopian themes and the setting.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be questioning it if that popped up in like an anime film or something like that.
I will agree with that completely. Yeah.
Very quickly, what did you guys think of Reloaded and Revolutions? Because I'm going to put it on the table. I really enjoyed both of them.
I loved them all. All three. Fine. There you go. Did not bother me.
Okay. Matrix Revolutions, I really enjoyed, actually. I would happily watch Matrix and that back-to-back.
Do you mean Reloaded, the second one, or Revolutions, the third one?
Oh, Reloaded, second one. So is Revolutions the third one?
Revolutions the third one, yep.
So yeah, Reloaded, second one, yes?
Yep.
Yeah, okay, sweet. That one I really enjoyed. That was awesome. Revolutions, I have a couple of problems with, because I feel like it stepped away from being all about the Matrix, and it became about we need to protect the real-life city. That was my problem with it, because the Matrix was always about we're going into this, you know, fake smoke screen of a world, this digital kind of platform, and that was hooked me on. Like, I remember watching the original Matrix and just being absolutely mind blown, because, you know, when I saw it, I hadn't seen any type of film that explored storytelling and in that type of way before, so I was just dumbfounded completely. And so when it came to the third one, it was just a lot of just, we need to protect Zion, let's get in mechs and battle. That's my problem with it. It wasn't so much Matrix.
It was more real life. Because you couldn't introduce Zion without it being important to them, because, you know, obviously once they're not in the Matrix, that's their home.
Yeah, of course.
You know?
Yeah.
So, but I just love the third one because that conclusion with Mr. Smith, it had to come to a conclusion.
Yeah.
That fight scene. Yeah.
Yeah,
the punch and every raindrop hitting his fist as he comes through. Oh, so good.
Very good performance by Hugo Weaving, by the way.
Oh, outstanding.
It was very good.
Outstanding.
It's the word of the day.
Oh, very good. Very good.
Yep.
All right. What did you watch, Andrew?
Right. So my movie I watched was The Warrior.
We're not. Not The Warriors, the gang.
No.
The Warrior.
Warriors.
No, just one word, Warrior. It's got Tom Hardy, Nick Nolte, and Joel Edgerton.
Oh, yes, this
Edgerton.
One.
Yeah,
yes.
It's about Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton, who are both brothers.
Yep.
And UFC plays a huge part in it. So Tom Hardy, he's a war veteran who saved a bunch of his friends but didn't want all the praise for it and kind of ran away. Because he didn't feel like he deserved it. And his brother, Joel Edgerton, is a school teacher. And, you know, they're telling him that he's going to be fired from his job and he can't afford to support his family. So he decides he's going to take up fighting again.
Yep.
But one of Tom Hardy's friends in the war, I think he got killed. I'm pretty sure that's what happened. He got killed. So he decided, I'm going to take up fighting again and win this tournament that's coming up and give his wife the money that I win, because they were like brothers in the army.
Yep.
And their dad, Nick Nolte, who's a abusive, alcoholic dad who they just don't talk to anymore.
Yep.
Tom Hardy goes back to him and says, I want you to train me for this fight, because that's the only thing you were ever good for, was training us.
Okay.
And his younger brother goes to an old friend who trains him, and it's just that classic story. Like, it's a little bit of a Rocky story. You know?
Okay.
Yep. So they both end up in the fight. They make it through to the final round, and would you know it, brother on brother.
Okay.
You know, so that's how it goes down. And the ultimate, you know, sacrifice happens is, you know, Joel Edgerton is fighting Tom Hardy.
Yep.
And, you know, Tom Hardy, he's just a beast. Throughout the whole movie, you see him go into the gym. He kicks like the number one's butt.
Yeah.
You know, in the gym, just like, I'll fight him because he needs someone to spar against, and absolutely whoops him, knocks him out. He's just a beast throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
And so he ends up having to fight his brother, and his brother wins every single fight by the skin of his teeth.
Okay. Yeah.
And then he ends up beating Tom Hardy because I think he pops his shoulder out or something like that. And Tom Hardy just says to him, just finish me. Just finish it, because I'm not going to win this. You need the money for your family, and, you know, we'll take it from there, kind of thing. It's really, from start to finish, the dialogue, the acting, the relationship between all three of them, plus the wife and the trainers and all of that, it all gels really nicely together. And if you like a bit of fighting, I'd definitely recommend it.
Yeah, nice.
There you go.
Yeah,
and it's Tom Hardy. What does Tom Hardy do that's not
I was going to say, Tom Hardy is he's brilliant, I think, in everything he kind of touches.
Yeah.
With maybe the exception of that Spy versus Spy one they did.
This means war.
I didn't mind that one. It was quite funny. I found it funny.
I really couldn't stand it. But, okay. Yeah, no, I haven't seen it. I'm looking at it now. I remember the poster, but I really don't remember anything else apart from that. Yeah. So, there you go. There you go.
It's good. It.
So that's a 2011 one.
Yeah, it definitely touches on a few heartstrings because, you know, like the dad's like a recovering alcoholic.
Okay.
Yeah. And then at one point, you know, he can't take anymore, so he starts drinking again. Yeah. And him and Tom Hardy share a scene in the hotel room in Vegas. I think it was Vegas I think it was somewhere else where the final fight was happening. And him and his dad just share this ultimate moment where, you know, he breaks down drunk and he's screaming at him in his face and ends up passing out, so Tom Hardy just holds him on the bed and just, you know, takes care of him while he gets all the alcohol out of his system. But the whole movie up to that point, he's just like, you do nothing but wake me up for training. All we do is talk about training and you stay away from me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because they just don't like his dad because the dad used to be abusive, you know.
Oh, okay.
So then that scene, reconciliation
happens.
Yeah. But, you know, think about the dad who's standing on the sidelines training Tom Hardy and then his other son's fighting him as well.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Who do you want to win?
Sounds like a very intriguing movie.
Yeah. There you go.
I recommend it. It's a 9 out of 10.
9 out of 10.
Ooh, there you go.
9 out of 10.
Yeah,
maybe I'll have to get... Is that one on Netflix at all, or is it a...
No, I searched for it on Netflix. Unfortunately, it wasn't there. It was there. That's why I went back to Netflix. Yeah. But I think they've taken it down.
Of course they have. Yeah.
Of course they have.
Yeah. I mean, Nick Nolte got an Oscar nomination for that film, actually.
Did he really?
Yeah, for Best Supporting Actor.
Oh, wow.
Very interesting.
Oh, there you go. All right. Well... moving forward, I think
we're going to get back in our time machine and go to the present.
So we've come from the past. We're now landing ourselves in the present. So a reminder: this is where we take a movie that is current, one that we've just seen. That's spoilers. In the movies. Yep, there will
Big
be
fat
spoilers, and we discuss that one. So we are now going to be looking at Spider-Man: Homecoming. Oh, Marvel's
interesting.
Marvel's. Let me think. One,
have you
two,
seen it?
I have. Yes,
you
have
seen it because you couldn't come with us on the day. So I was so worried. That you wouldn't see it.
Nah.
Yeah, so it's Marvel's third reboot of Spider-Man because there was the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man series, which most of us think of as the first Spider-Man series, is actually the second time they made a Spider-Man movie.
1976?
Something like that.
Made a Spider-Man movie?
Yeah, now I remember seeing
it. Which was awful.
It was like a TV movie or something like that.
I think it might have been...
Polarized lenses? Is that? It was awful.
Little ropes as webbing.
Little ropes.
Yeah. Now I remember this from like.
I never saw it.
Now I only have vague recollections from it because my brother, especially, it was his big. When we were kids, he loved Spider-Man.
Isn't he younger than you?
He is younger than me. Yeah. But and I don't even know how he like because we never had the comics or anything.
Yeah.
I think it might have been the TV show or maybe.
Yeah. See, the TV show was bigger for me than the comics.
Yeah.
I didn't get
the animated
TV
show.
My first comic I got, I think I was about 10 or 11.
Oh, okay. You know? But yeah, so we found this old movie of Spider-Man, and it really like I mean I was a kid at the time, and I watched it and I was like, this is rubbish. And even as a kid, I was like, this is very average. But yeah, so Tobey Maguire, they had obviously that successful series.
Mm-hmm.
To a point. That's
one
right.
and two, brilliant. Number three, just throw it in the bin and walk away.
Well, I think
set it on fire.
I think it was just Sony. From what I've read, apparently Sony really wanted Venom in there, and Sam Raimi was a bit
hesitant.
See, I
was excited for Venom, but Venom is a hulking giant, not a skinny dweeb from the 70s show.
Well, that's right. Now, all three of the Spider-Mans were, I think they were directed by...
Sam Raimi.
Sam Raimi, there we go.
Written and directed by them.
Yeah. Yep. Now, I mean, the first one... Now, look, full disclosure, I didn't really like the Tobey Maguire series, 1, 2, or 3. Like, I mean, I thought...
I don't know how many times I saw number one.
I thought they were, I actually remember seeing it... I think I was looking over someone's shoulder on a plane, and a spider... They were watching this movie... And it looked so B-grade. And I was like, what the heck is that? It's just got cheese, like really rubbish costumes and that. And then sure enough, it was Spider-Man 1.
Oh,
and
no.
I was like, oh my goodness. Now, Spider-Man 1 with Tobey Maguire was 2002.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, quite a while ago.
Yeah.
But that being said, I know lots of people aren't really with me on this, but I actually really enjoyed the Amazing Spider-Man reboots with Andrew Garfield.
I enjoyed the first one.
I did enjoy Andrew Garfield's take on Spider-Man.
He's a good Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Yep.
His take on Spider-Man was brilliant. In the suit, brilliant, funny, charismatic, skinny.
Yep.
But his Peter, but he's just too good looking to be Peter Parker, man. The skater dude with the hair, and he's a nerd, man. He's awkward. He's out of the zone. You know, not Andrew Garfield. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think he could
get laid, man.
Yeah, but I feel like he wasn't essentially a nerd, though, as well. He was more of that kind of hipster.
Hipster, yeah.
Edgy, like, don't talk to me because I'm listening to, like, some punk band type
thing.
That's
not Peter Parker. And Peter Parker doesn't skate, man.
This is an interesting point. So what we are talking about this time, obviously, is Spider-Man Homecoming, which is the 2017 reboot. With Tom Holland as Spider-Man, and it was who was it directed by?
John Watts directed it.
And then it was written by like a whole team of people,
six or seven people.
It was Marvel's baby, and Sony just paid for it.
Yeah, that's right. Which you know I think is good. Mm-hmm. Now, one thing that I actually think about is so you obviously saying that Andrew Garfield was not nerdy enough
for Peter Parker.
Yeah. Now. One thing in the Amazing Spider-Man's, they still keep the same bullying structure, I think, with Andrew Garfield's character being bullied by the jocks and everything. And one thing that I think we've discussed already, just outside of this, is that in the new Spider-Man Homecoming, the bullying scenario is actually quite different.
They've revamped it.
Yeah,
it's very current now because
bullies aren't big and hulking and play sport. They're just that kid who says that one thing to you over and over again each day, and that's bullying.
Yeah, that's right.
You don't need to be a jock to be a bully. You can be the head bully. You know?
You can be a friend and still be a bully on someone, which I think...
Or as you can see, with Flash, who's played by... I realised. The guy from Grand Budapest Hotel?
Yep.
Yeah, Grand Budapest Hotel.
I did not even realise.
Didn't you?
No, I didn't realise at all at the time. So that's...
He's actually a good actor.
Tony Revolori.
Yeah.
So he plays Flash.
Yeah.
And he's... As you can see in the movie, he's not a jock. He's actually smaller than Tom Holland.
Mm.
And he's the guy who's insulting him while DJing at a party.
Yeah.
And
that's very bullying funny. Now, man.
Yeah, exactly. It's a different kind of bullying.
Yeah.
But yeah, so overall though, we talked a bit about the other Spider-Mans.
Yeah.
What did you think?
Okay.
You go first, yep.
Spider-Man's my boy. I've loved Spider-Man since I was like, I don't know, knee high to a grasshopper. Tinkerer was in the movie.
Yes.
Tinkerer makes everything for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was in the movie. We had Shocker as well. We had two Shockers. One got killed and one took the mantle.
Yep.
And then we also had Scorpion. I don't know if you guys noticed who Scorpion was. It was on the ship. He was chatting to the thugs and then he got hit by the car and went under the water. And then you saw him in the post-credit scene with all that stuff on his arm in the jail talking to Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
That's the Scorpion. The Scorpion is an amazing character. They're just going to hopefully build that character base for Spider-Man to face against brilliantly. You know, he's a good character to do. What else did we have? We also had Donald Glover. I can't remember.
Childish Gambino, so good.
Yeah.
He played a character who is also, I think he's called the Prowler in the comic book series.
Okay.
And they even
in the alternate universe.
They also refer to him as the Prowler when they're looking up his police record and stuff like that. He is the uncle of Miles Morales, who becomes Spider-Man. As well.
Yep.
And when he says in the movie, I've got a nephew that lives in this neighborhood, that's Miles Morales, man.
So do you reckon they're going to bring that in?
Maybe.
Maybe. He is an alternate universe Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Miles Morales.
Well, there was a Spider-Man in that universe, but he got killed. It was Peter Parker, but he got killed. Yeah,
the ultimate universe. That's right.
So it's just how they've done it and how well they've structured it. Even when he interrogated Donald Glover in that car park, and you know, webbed his hand to the boot of the car. The license plate was the date and like the first issue where Miles Morales shows up in the comic books.
Oh my goodness! Glad you noticed that.
it's unbelievable the way that they've all structured it together. Yeah. It is so good. And Spider-Man's suit, the lady that he talks to, like the suit has a voice and everything.
Karen.
Karen. That is the guy who does Jarvis, or now the Vision. That's his wife.
Is it really?
Yes.
There you go.
See you later, Scarlet Witch.
They've fully tied it all in together.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I actually really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. What I liked about the film, it was very grounded. And what I mean by grounded is it explored so well the positives and negatives of being Spider-Man and being a teenager at school.
Yes.
Like a sophomore at school. So well. I mean, you've got times in the film where it's like, do I go to this party and be a Spider-Man so I can be popular with my friends, or do I go investigate this thing, or do I go to this decathlon and win, or do I, try and stop the Vulture from doing something? Like the other films have explored it to a point.
And then it's like, high school's done, you're out, you can deal
with it now. Exactly, yeah. But I just feel like the way John Watts and his writing team wrote it, it was just so realized. Like, you empathize, you're like, I don't know about you guys, but I was like, damn, like his friend, he might not have any friends anymore. Like, it makes him so much more isolated and brings to fruition just the reality of what being a superhero would be like if you were a teenager.
Yeah.
Like, you have to make sacrifices, you might not have friends. Yeah. I just, that part of the film, I love so much.
But that's it. That was the good thing about this Spider-Man. When you look at Spider-Man 2, when he stops the train and all that, Tobey Maguire's one, and they pull him in and they're all looking at him like, oh, he's just a kid. Guy's like 42 years old, you know? Like, he's not a kid.
Yeah.
Tom Holland's a kid.
I remember thinking that. And you're like, you pull up and he's like, he's just a kid. He's like, well, he's not.
He's not. He's like in college or university or whatever.
Yeah.
He's not a kid.
No. I really liked it. But I think let's talk a bit about the insertion of Spider-Man into the Marvel Universe. Mm-hmm. One thing I thought about Spider-Man Homecoming is I really think that Spider-Man in the Marvel Universe is better than Spider-Man by himself.
Yes.
There's more to play around with. There's more, like, the dynamic of him and Tony, which actually turned out to be far less than the trailers led us to believe.
The little use of Tony Stark was brilliant, because they could have washed Tony Stark all the way through that movie.
Yeah, exactly.
And it would have been Tony Stark movie again.
Yeah.
You know?
But instead, they only bring him in for,
I think he only had one extra scene compared to what we saw in the trailers.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
But it was only a handful of scenes, and it's very much that, instead of doing an origin Spider-Man story, which we have seen and has been done to death, they cut out all the cliche. Like, they didn't say, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, which, don't get me wrong, like, is still great.
Yeah,
like,
it's a
seminal line.
You know it's there. You see it in his face when he has to do these things that he has to do, like, instead of going to the party, go and investigate.
Yeah.
You know,
but then they don't do things like, they don't bring up the fact he only mentions, oh yeah, I was bitten by a spider. They don't say
he
how.
He just mentions it.
They don't bring Uncle Ben's death into it much. Nope. It's just,
who could play Uncle Ben? Sorry.
Well, it's just like
Tobey Maguire. You bring Tobey Maguire back to be Uncle Ben.
Full circle.
That's how you connect the universes.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, like, I mean, you don't have any of that. Instead, we have a different style of origin story, which is like the training story, where it's, we don't have him going, how do I come to terms with being, you know, a superhero? Yeah.
He's still figuring it out.
Yeah.
Coming of age, I'd say.
Exactly. Yeah.
He doesn't hit the ground running.
Yeah. How do I insert myself into the Avengers and make myself part of this?
Because you can tell that's all he wants. And then at the end, it's like, you know what? If they need me, they can call me, but I don't need it. And that's how he is in the comics, you know?
Yeah.
He's his own thing.
Yeah.
He is, yeah. Because, well, that's the other thing, actually. I was listening to something where, in the real world, Spider-Man is Marvel's moneymaker.
Oh, like,
Spider-Man is the Marvel equivalent of DC's Batman. That's what makes their money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But in the cinematic universe, obviously with licensing issues and things like that, they couldn't bring him in initially until they worked out a deal to get him in with Civil War and bring him in, which obviously everyone was really excited about. And he was oh gosh, like when he came, when he landed on the, even though I'd seen it in the trailer a million times, when he landed on the
my jaw was on the floor. It's like, oh
yeah, and he's got Cap's shield, and I'm just like,
hey everyone.
So yeah, like now bringing him in, he's not the moneymaker. He is just a kid who's part of the team. I really want to be part of the team. And so yeah, I think it was a nice refreshing touch of Spider-Man because they didn't rehash the same things we already knew. They took it from a new angle, and they took it in a really delightful angle, I think.
Yeah.
Speaking of taking things from a new angle, Michael Keaton as Adrian Toomes plus the Vulture.
Yes.
I think that was honestly so good.
It was brilliant.
Very good. The retinkering of the origins and the motivations of him as a villain suited the universe. So, like him being a scavenger of of past like Avengers battles. Not only does that bring more depth to the character,
the way he spoke was like a vulture, you know?
But it just bring it's just the right origin for this type of cinematic universe.
Yeah,
which I liked, and that's kind of Marvel. I'm going to go straight. The good thing is,
you can see his point of view as well. You're like, I'm on the side of Spider-Man, but I'm also on the side of the Vulture.
You empathize with him so
much. He's looking after
his family.
Exactly.
And I think it's also something that, I mean, it is a character story that we can all relate to at least on some level, whether it's someone we know or it's a story we read in the news of someone who, you know, well, I mean, in the beginning of the story of the movie, Michael Keaton's character he's basically shelled out a whole lot of money for all this new equipment because he got this contract to clean up from the event of the incident from the first Avengers.
Yeah.
And then what happens is that S.H.I.E.L.D. comes in. They basically say, nope, this is ours now. Get lost.
Was it something that Tony Stark set up himself? I think it's called damage control.
Actually, you're right. It wasn't S.H.I.E.L.D. It was something that Stark Industries set up.
Which was going to be a TV series, but DC beat them to the punch with... I think their own version of it.
Oh, I did not know that.
Where it's a team of people and they have to clean up after superheroes.
Oh.
Well, and it didn't do too well, unfortunately.
Is that Legends of Tomorrow?
No, that's not Legends of Tomorrow. It's like... It's not damage control. It's...
Who knows?
It's something else.
Who cares?
Well, anyways, it didn't do well, so you get this... You sympathize with Michael Keaton's character because you're like... He's done nothing wrong.
Yep.
He's just been ousted by someone with a lot of money who had the influence. And so you get there Tony Stark, you jerk. Like, you deserve to get...
One of my favorite bits from that whole movie where him and Tom Holland are in the car and you can see him figuring it out who he is in the back seat.
Yes.
You know, it's not kids. He's an adult and he's like, you know, your voice sounds familiar. And he's piecing it together. Like,
it's what would happen.
A kid wouldn't piece it together.
Yeah.
But an adult would be like, heard your voice before.
Yeah.
Where have I heard that before? Oh, when I was being annoyed by this spider freak, you know?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And the way that they do that dialogue and the way that he just turns around with the gun and the speaks to him. Oh, the great scene.
Yeah.
The chemistry between them both, the way that they both portrayed each other and looked at each other in the car. It's like, this is fantastic.
Yeah. Also, did you guys, I don't know about, but Adrian Toomes being Liz's father, I did not see that coming.
Very good.
I heard that it was going to happen, but even by the point when it happened in the movie, I completely forgot. Yeah. So when he opened up the door, I was still just like, "What?
Yeah,
hold on."
Well, I thought it was going to be the shocker number two, because of the ethnicity between what's her name? Oh.
You mean Liz?
Liz, that's right. Yeah,
played
Liz.
By
sorry,
Laura Harrier.
Yeah, Harrier. I thought it was going to be him. Like, all right, it's going to be the parent, and he's going to contact with Michael Keaton. And then he opens the door with Michael Keaton. I was like, phew.
Yeah, see, I did not see that coming at all. Very so when it happened, I was just like, what?
Yeah.
Hang on a minute.
Very good. Quickly, I think another great scene was the scene where in the third act, Spider-Man has like the whole roof of Vulture's hideout
on top of him.
Yep.
And, with the half-face?
The half-face, yeah. And he's in his little like clothes suit.
Yeah.
And he's trying to do it. And this kid's like screaming. He's like almost about to cry.
He's freaking out.
Yeah, he doesn't know what to do. And then he looks at like a puddle and, you know, he sees his like kind of face. And Tony Stark's like, if nothing about this suit, you don't deserve it.
Yeah.
And then he's like, this is who I'm meant to be. It doesn't matter if I have a suit or not. Yeah. I'm Spider-Man.
And that's where you get the great power comes great responsibility.
Exactly.
Well, Did you guys know that scene is actually...
A Spider-Man cover?
Yes, it's the Doctor Octopus thing, yeah.
No, it's actually from one of the very earliest Spider-Man comics.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's about Doctor Octopus, sorry.
It was actually a Steve Ditko scene.
Yep.
Like way back when from Amazing Spider-Man number 33.
33, yeah.
We're talking like when Stan Lee was still like writing it and everything. Yeah. And it's one of those scenes that he's in there, and it's basically the exact same thing. So he's crushed under all of this, and it's
got water coming up.
Yeah, and he's like, I'm stuck. So, help! I can't do this. And it's that whole, no, you have to do it. Like this is something that only you can do. You need to build up that inner strength. You need to think of the people who need you and what's important. And it's been I was reading this article about it, and it has been paid homage to countless times. Like they've done it in, I think they've done it about 7 or 8 times in the comics.
Mm.
They did it in the the Spider-Man cartoon TV series.
Yep.
Nice. Obviously they did it in this one, the Spider-Man Homecoming, and it is that direct.
Well, they even do it in the Tobey Maguire one where he gets half of it blown off and he's got half of it on the other side.
Yeah.
You know, there's the imagery there.
Yeah.
But this was looking at it in the puddle. And it wasn't even the proper mask. It was the one he made.
Yeah.
Which
I think makes it even better because that whole thing of, again, I was listening to something else where there seems to be a big emphasis in the Marvel Universe about the suit.
Yes.
And how, like, you know, are you anything with the suit? Or are you just nothing? And I think Cap says it to Iron Man in
Civil War.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely does in the comics.
He does say it in... he says it in the first Avengers. He goes, you're nothing. You're just a man in a suit.
Yeah.
And he said, everything special about you came out of a bottle. And there's wine you get in the suit and we'll take this,
outside. Like, but then, you do things where you take the shield away from Cap and all those kinds of things. And it's this big... it's all about the suit now. And then you take Spider-Man and obviously the big thing is, and they said it's a trailer, like, if you can't do this with the suit, then you're nothing.
And now how do we all feel about Tony Stark making in the suit? Because in the comics, Spider-Man makes a suit, la 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 la.
Do you mean because there's 3 suits in the movie. There's the one that he made, which looks like Jarmy's.
Yeah.
And then there's...
Jarmy's.
And then there's the one that Tony Stark gave him in Civil War, which is the majority. And then there's the one that he reveals at the very end.
Yeah.
Now, it's like a mashup.
Well, just the suit from Civil War. Say the one from Civil War. Okay, how do you feel about him making the suit for him?
Look, he does it in... Iron Spider suit in the comics? Yeah. I was fine with it. I mean, it doesn't really bother me.
Because when you think about it, yes, he made him the suit and it comes with all these things, but he's taking the tech that Peter made himself. So the web shooters and the consistency of the fluid and all that, that's all Peter. He made all of that, so it does show you the genius that he is in.
Yeah.
And that he can provide towards the suit, but I didn't mind it. I heard some people just like, ugh, but Spider-Man makes his own suit.
Yeah, but there's no way he could have afforded to make a suit of that tech.
Yeah, exactly. Let's be realistic here.
He could have made spandex and put some webbing on it and stuff like that.
I mean, film's more grounded.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It just ties the universe.
It does.
Yeah, he feels more like a teenager in this movie than any other of the previous movies.
So good.
Yeah.
So good.
So good. So good.
Can I quickly say...
Did we have any issues with the movie?
Hang on.
Very quickly, before we get into issues, can I just say... Michelle, who's played by Zendaya.
You know those two are actually dating now in real life?
I did not know that. Can I tell you, if anyone's ever going to listen to this from any big thing, put her front and center. I want more of her. Yeah. She was so damn funny.
You see, that's how they get her into the next movie.
That is just...
Yeah. MJ.
I love how... They just took... I mean, she's an original character, Kevin Feige has stated.
Yes, that's right.
Because her name is Michelle, it's not Mary.
Michelle Jones, yes. But I just love how she wasn't like a typical, like, oh, I'm a cheerleader girl or anything like that. She was like this girl who just sticks to herself, kind of hates everybody just because, and I loved it. Because I'm like, that's how teenagers are now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's like you get these people who are just like...
I love that she's just so sassy and just like the scene where he comes into the prom and he just gives him the finger.
Yeah.
Like the wave.
Everyone else is like, hi, Pete, come over here, Pete.
And she's like, oh, hey.
It's just great fiddling this film to this generation, like the target audience of teens of this generation. You've got Flash, obviously, as the friend/bully, and then Michelle is this.
When he steals his car.
Yeah.
I'm commandeering your car.
Yeah. And calls his what's his name to? Oh,
Ned.
Ned, that, yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Calls Ned to tell, I just stole his car. Yeah. That's amazing.
Very good.
So good.
But yeah, if they make her MJ, I would be fine
who
with
cares?
It.
Who cares? It's still
I'm,
good.
I'm fine good with it because
she can still be
it's
an actress.
It's retooling
yeah.
it for like a new yeah. generation of
exactly. And the thing teenagers. Is, we need to understand as well that if we keep hearing the same stories over and over and over, then like nothing's going to be worthwhile. It's all going to be, like, it'd just be, I mean, it's the same things we've heard. So by bringing in someone like Zendaya to play Michelle, who at the very end of the movie is like, oh, you know, you can call me MJ.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, oh, I mean, it's highlighting the importance that she's going to play. And she's not the traditional Mary Jane.
Gives him a little look at the end.
Exactly. Yeah, which was so funny. Yeah, it's not the traditional MJ, but it is. It's highlighting, hey, here's someone who's going to be important in the universe. And you know what? Cool. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. As the whole internet was trying to say with Donald Glover, saying that he could play Spider-Man, and why couldn't there be a person of color playing Spider-Man? You know, why does it have to be a white boy?
Yeah.
It's, like, these things can change, and I think it's good. I think it keeps it fresh, and I think that, it means that when we go and see the movie, we're not going to be like, ah, yes, that red-headed girl, that's probably going to be MJ. Yeah.
Well, they did that with Michael Keaton and him being the father of the...
Yeah, Liz. That's right.
Of Liz, you know? It shows a relationship between an African-American woman and a white dude.
Yeah.
You know? I didn't even bat an eyelid. I was like, that makes sense.
Very good.
But not even that. But just like, we don't even need to stick to the traditionals of what the comics
say.
Not what they say, but just like, you know, like Spider-Man. I mean, obviously they have made a Spider-Man who is African-American. But why couldn't Peter Parker be African-American? There really is no reason.
There is no reason.
But I mean, they are always going to have backlash about that. You obviously, the Harry Potter musical that was in London, they cast Hermione was a
African-American
girl. Although I don't think she was actually American. But anyway.
Indeed.
And there was this huge, Hermione's not. It's like, well, why not? Like, what's the big deal? She's a character and how
she's intelligent with fuzzy hair.
Like
it's anyone.
But anyway. But what you were saying earlier, sorry, Andrew, issues. Was there anything in particular we didn't like about it?
I only had one.
Yeah.
Okay, yep.
Peter Parker has a camera with him all the time.
You know what? I didn't mind that. I noticed that as well.
Okay. Yeah, that was my only quibble.
Yeah.
I feel like Zach's got more. Yeah. I feel like I'm going to have to punch
you.
I do.
Go ahead. I don't know about you guys. It just ended kind of like the third act was over. Like, I was wanting more. Yeah, yeah. I think, obviously...
Bit of a Batman finish, like, well, he leaves a calling card.
Not really. I feel like it was more... Because this film is more kind of character-driven. It's more coming of age, going through Peter as he is Spider-Man as a teenager. So I felt like action took a second seat to that, which was good.
Mm.
Okay. I felt like it's not... I don't think every superhero film needs to have, you know, like, massive action scenes.
Yeah.
Like, that's not... Like, whilst it is what you expect from superhero film. It shouldn't be like a staple, like third act, massive scene, second act, massive scene, even though there was. But after that beach scene, it was just kind of like...
Just done.
Yeah. Which, I mean, it ended kind of comically, but I don't know. I just felt a little bit... Looked at the time, I was like, wow, that's it.
Yeah. And the post-credit scene with Captain America.
Yeah.
As much as we all loved it, it was kind of just like, screw you.
For anyone who has sat through this who hasn't seen it already and is fine with us just destroying everything... there is a post-credit scene.
As always.
It does not reveal anything at all.
Just tells you to
be
patient.
The very end of the credits.
Yeah. It's there. Like, so you could possibly leave it.
Yeah. And but just the second thing was the trailer, I reckon, revealed quite a bit of the film.
Do you reckon?
I felt
different.
Detail the first, second, and third act from that film. Really? Just from the trailer.
But you look at the third act with Tony Stark talking to him, leading him towards the Avengers sign.
Yeah.
That whole dialogue wasn't in the movie, and that scene was at the end. It wasn't in the middle. Talking about the big vulture guy.
Yeah, it was most definitely, yeah. Mm. But just like the whole the plot I don't know, the direction you could tell, like, you know, starts off in the first act. He's in high school.
Yeah.
His best friend finds out he's Spider-Man. Second act obviously has a run-in with the Shocker and the Vulture of some sort. Loses his suit on the massive ferry because that splits apart. Does the like train sequence thing.
Yep.
Then third act, it's him in the old Spider-Man suit versus the Vulture on a beach scene where like he gets defeated and masks off. I just felt like I could predict.
Okay,
the whole
I'll give you that
like,
one.
Obviously, there's going to be like dialogue and scenes in between that are going to be pivotal to the story, but the whole just overview, I felt like I could guess from that, which I have qualms about because trailers nowadays, they seem to spoil quite a little bit, which...
It is hard now because I try not to watch the TV spots because they give away a lot.
I mean, we talked about this in the last episode that, you know, really trailers need to calm down a bit and there's, you know, one, like a teaser and one trailer and don't reveal them like a year in advance.
Yeah. But they got to make bank, man. They got to
That's true.
Put that merchandise out there.
The issue, the only issue I'm totally happy with it from start to finish. I really enjoyed it.
I need to see it again.
I didn't really love the whole reveal at the end of like Aunt May finding out. I just felt it was a bit. It wasn't really necessary.
No, and the whole
I don't
what
think it
the,
was needed.
That wasn't.
Yeah,
it was a bit like. Does she need to know?
I know she obviously knows in the comics, and it's a very pivotal
thing.
Yeah,
but not straight away. It took him a good long time. It was like an adult when he told her.
Yeah, I think it was just. It wasn't. I didn't think it paid it very good justice.
Homer.
And it was, I just don't think it was really needed and didn't for the story. It was just kind of like, ooh, now she knows. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well.
Let's go.
Yeah, and then straight into the music.
Yeah.
No.
All right.
Oh, well.
Let's say we get back in our time machine.
Yeah, so back in the time machine, we're now moving forward into the future. Things that are coming out and what we think about it, whether we're excited or not or anything like that.
Yeah.
What do we have that's upcoming that we... want to talk about?
I'll let you two go first, just because mine's still Marvel related. So
okay, too easy. So I'm doing a film called Atomic Blonde.
See, I know nothing.
Oh,
nothing.
Do you? Okay.
So where does it come from? Who is she?
So this is coming out fairly soon. August 3rd in Australia.
Okay.
International. Who knows? So Atomic Blonde is directed by David Leitich. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Now he is an uncredited co-director of the action film John Wick, which was very good. And David Leitich is also filming Deadpool 2 right now because he's the director of that film.
Okay. Yeah, because the original director.
Exactly,
conflict of interest, so they got John Wick 2 director.
So
John Wick director.
Yeah, so before we get into who's starring in the overall plot, I just want to point out that David Leitich has a background in stunts.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a stunt actor and he's a stunt coordinator. He's done stunts and been a stunt coordinator for films like Fight Club.
Yep.
V for Vendetta, Bond Ultimatum, The Mechanic, and the Russo brothers actually brought him and his partner, Chad Stahelski, I can't pronounce that right, I'm sorry, they brought them in to coordinate fight scenes for The Winter Soldier and Civil War.
Fantastic.
Okay.
And of course, Chad's, whatever his last name is, sorry, he's done John Wick 1, and he just did John Wick 2, which released recently.
It was so good.
Wow.
I haven't seen it yet. I need to watch it. Really
I went on my own and saw it, and I just walked out of there just like, I can't wait for the next one.
Yeah.
How it ended, it ends leading into the third one.
Right,
I want it now.
Stop it. Okay, so Atomic Blonde, it stars Charlize Theron as Lorraine. She's
Now, tell me, where does Atomic Blonde come from? Is it a comic? Is it
I think it's just an
original idea. Original IP,
Cool. Awesome. I literally know nothing about it.
Yeah.
Like, it has to come from somewhere.
So, Charlize Theron, she's an MI6 agent, British MI6 agent. Also stars James McAvoy, Professor X.
Yep.
What else has he been in?
He was in, he's been in Split recently by M. Night.
Shyamalan.
Yep.
Oh, is this Professor X?
Can't film
it. And he's also in...
Something like that. Wanted.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Also stars Sophia Boutella, who was from Kingsman, Secret Service. She was Gazelle. She had metal legs.
Blades? Yeah, the blades.
And she was also the mummy in the recent Tom Cruise mummy reboot.
That successful venture.
What it's about, Charlize Theron, an undercover MI6 agent, is sent to Berlin during the Cold War to investigate the murder of a fellow agent and recover a missing list of double agents.
Okay.
And James McAvoy kind of meets up with her in Berlin. He's, I think he's American or something like that. And basically tries to help her. Now, the reason I'm excited for this film is John Wick was awesome. It was just came out of nowhere. Just this awesome action film starring Keanu Reeves. What it's about is his dog basically gets killed by a bunch of Russian mobsters and his car taken, and the dog was left by his dying wife who died of cancer.
Yeah.
And he's a former hitman, so he's like, I'm going to get back into the business and just destroy this Russian mobster, and it is so good. Like, surprisingly good story and lore as well.
Okay.
Sucks you in. Great fight scenes. And that's one of the... I kind of see this as a girl version of John Wick, just in a different setting.
Yeah.
Awesome action scenes from what the trailers have revealed. Seems like the choreography is really on point. We got nice use of some Queen music in the trailers as well. Leads me to believe there should be some nice kick and butt to some good old tunes. And it's also, I'm very interested to see how David Leitich directs this film and what type of shape the narrative takes and how important that is in the film, because he's directing Deadpool 2, which is no small task considering how much critical and commercial success the first film got. So early reviews, it premiered at some sort of film festival, whether it was South by Southwest or Sundance or Cannes, who knows.
Yeah.
But early reviews are quite good. It's got a respectable 68 on Metacritic, 6.3 on IMDb. I just can't wait. It's just going to be a good action film to go see.
Yeah, I haven't seen the trailer yet, but I remember listening to another podcast that was, they were saying they were very excited about this and how it looked like it was going to be a really, really original take on the kind of spy genre.
Yeah.
And that Charlize Theron was going to be they think she was a great casting for it. And was
the only thing I've seen is her in a car and she's killing two dudes with the heel of her shoe.
So good.
With her high heels.
Amazing.
Yeah.
and look, John Wick was just Keanu Reeves just killing the whole, like the entire Russian mob. And it was so satisfying.
Oh.
It was just really good action scenes. As I said, great story. So yeah. I'm really excited for this.
I want to be John Wick so bad.
Yeah.
He's so good.
So yeah, that was my future film. Can't wait.
And that comes out 8th of August.
So 8th of August, yes.
Oh, that's only like 2 weeks away.
2 weeks, so yeah. I will be seeing that film.
He'll be there. I'll be there.
Yeah, we'll all be there.
We'll all be there.
Come meet us.
It'll be fantastic.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have picked up an article that was was written about a week ago.
Mm.
And I was kind of just on the internet, just kind of browsing, and this came across my screen. Netflix sets live-action Umbrella Academy series for 2018 debut. Now, the Umbrella Academy is a comic book series that was written by Gerard Way. Gerard Way was the frontman and lead singer of My Chemical Romance.
Yeah.
Now, if anyone is like, what's he doing writing, something, blah, blah, blah. He's actually had a lot of experience writing comics. He's currently actually directing DC's Young Animals entire series.
Huh.
So that is I can't even remember any of the.
Is that animated?
No. It's a comic series.
Young Justice. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so he's directing the whole series of that. Wait, sorry, did you say Young Justice, was it?
Oh, that's the animated series that Andrew might have
been. Oh,
sorry,
okay.
When you said directed, I thought you meant something upon TV or
yeah. Oh, no,
not
no,
directing
sorry.
The comic book.
Yeah, no, sorry. So he's chairing, he's in charge. But yeah, so he's in charge of all of that. And when I originally saw that it was, like, going way back, I kind of picked up Umbrella Academy in the stores and I kind of looked at it and I was like, this cover looks incredible and looked, had a flick through and the art style looks real. The comics is originally penned and inked by Gabriel Ba.
Mm-hmm.
I may be not saying his name correctly, but... But it's very heavy, dark lines, solid colors. It was a real, reminded me a lot of the Hellboy comics, actually, that kind of style.
You do love your Hellboy.
I do, indeed. So anyway, I picked it up and I read it, and my goodness, it was one of the best comic series I've ever written.
Wrote one?
No, wow. ever read.
Holding out on me?
How could you, Tyson?
But yeah, so what happens is it follows... the story of these, or the premise of which is there were, once upon a time, there were, I think, 47, I think they say,
ooh,
babies were born
babies
without any warning to women who had shown no signs of pregnancy,
yeah,
all at the exact same time around the world. Yeah. Like, suddenly, all these people just gave birth.
So interesting.
And so freaky. This...
The story, not the action.
Yeah. So this kind of, like... the big philanthropist, inventor, entrepreneur guy called The Monocle basically sets out to adopt as many as he could, and he finds seven of them. Most of the others died because they had no idea that was happening, or they were abandoned, or whatever. So he finds seven of them, and he basically brings them in, he wipes their identities, and they become his children. He raises them, and they all have basically superpowers, but they're not your traditional kinds of superpowers. So, for instance, one of them, he's just like the leader, and he's good at strategy. That's not his superpower, but he's incredibly strong. And he, through an accident later in his life, ends up having his head transplanted onto like a space ape or something like that. So he's got like the body of an ape. But anyway, so he's just incredibly strong. There's another one called The Rumor. Mm. And her superpower is literally anything she says, oh, I heard a rumor that...
Yeah.
Let's say someone, or one of the scenes, someone's on like this trussing on a stage, and she goes, I heard a rumor that trussing was built really badly and it collapses with any weight. Suddenly that is now true. Anything that she says suddenly becomes true.
Interesting.
So it's all these very... And there's another guy who can time travel, but then so he disappears, and then suddenly he comes back and he's a child and he can't age. So it's all these superhero powers that are very different to usual.
Yeah.
It's very, I wouldn't say it's super dark, but it has dark elements. It's very edgy, and I'm really excited because Netflix has picked it up, and it was slated originally for a movie developed by Universal, and they didn't do anything with it. There were a couple of scripts that were made, and nothing really happened with it. Then they were thinking of making it a TV series, and nothing really happened there. And then recently, Netflix have won a bidding war, essentially, for the rights to it. And they, as we know, Netflix don't buy rights without planning on doing anything with it.
The
so
monies.
they're planning on bringing it as a 2018 debut. And so obviously Netflix has a lot of superhero stuff already with the whole Marvel series.
Yep.
But they, where is it? So Gerard Way is going to co-executive produce it. The pilot has been adapted by Jeremy Slater, who has done Fox's The Exorcist. So
that actually got good reviews.
Yeah, I've heard good things about that, but I ain't going to watch it because I don't like that stuff. It scares me.
Yeah. so I'm happy that Netflix are doing it because they're not scared to try things different. They're not scared to try things that are dark and edgy.
Yeah.
And realistically, I feel that they're kind of not scared to fail either. Like, they've got enough behind them that they can make something. If it doesn't go very well, it's okay. That's it. It's done. But I really do think that if, given what I've read about it, the team behind it, I think it's going to be really, really good. So there's no trailers or anything. Nothing except pretty much one article.
Just a story.
But I'm very excited about it.
It does sound good.
It sounds very interesting.
Yeah, man.
I'm quite intrigued by this concept because if it's a comic or a film or TV series with that type of concept, it's just, I don't know how to describe it. It's just different. It's not your typical...
It's good to hear different... powers.
Exactly,
as opposed to super strong, super fast.
Or just sci-fi ideas like unexpectedly 47 women give birth at the exact same time.
Yeah.
The whole concept is...
It's just ideas like that. It's like, no one's ever done anything like that before. It's just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, oh.
I would highly recommend it to anyone who likes comics. I would definitely say there's two series that Gerard Way wrote. One dealing with their sister who apparently had no superpowers, but turns out she actually had extremely severe superpowers that their dad deliberately kept hidden from her.
Yeah.
And then the second one is actually involving John F. Kennedy's assassination, which they do brilliantly. Like, it is so well done. It's so well designed.
That's cool.
Yeah, highly recommend it.
Yeah.
Very excited for the series.
Good stuff.
Hopefully it'll be extremely good.
Yeah.
Well, what I'm going to be doing is we're going to take a trip back to Marvel.
Yep.
And discuss it because I think it wasn't last weekend, the weekend before maybe. I think it was D23.
Yep.
That's true.
Yes, Disney's big convention.
Yeah.
Disney's Comic-Con.
Yeah, essentially.
Basically. And now they own Marvel. That's a big deal.
Disney just owns everything. Like,
they do own everything.
Almost, because
they got all the monies, man.
It's like, I don't see any film anymore that's commercially successful by, 20th Century Fox or Sony.
Well, you got Deadpool.
You got Deadpool, yeah, but any just other different, original content films, feel like.
No, I agree on that one.
I mean, Baby Driver came out recently. That was awesome.
I actually heard recently that Baby Driver is only the fourth commercially successful original idea.
For
the rest of all been... No, for 2017.
Oh, wow.
The rest have either been reboots or sequels.
Holy moly, man.
Now, I might have that statistic kind of wrong, but it gives you a bit of an idea. But anyway, sorry. Carry on.
Yeah, so obviously D23 came out.
Yep.
Marvel was there with their junket and doing the things that they do. But they released your first look at Thanos and the Children of Thanos, the Black Order.
Children.
Ooh. So as you know from Infinity War, you've got... Gamora and Nebula, they're children of Thanos as well, and they have to fight against each other. But this are his, like, four children that he... This is my team.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
And he's going to send them, obviously, in Infinity War to receive the stones.
Okay.
To put into his gauntlet.
Yeah.
Now, one of the... I've got some pictures here to show you. Obviously, on iTunes, I can't show you. But one of the guys, his name is Corvus Glaive. Now, this is what he looks like. Let me show you what it looks like. So that's him there.
Ooh.
Now that staff in his hand.
Yep.
As long as he holds that, he's immortal.
What?
Yeah. He can get knocked down and he'll always get back up as long as he has that in his hand. So he never lets that go.
Is that why he kind of looks a bit like a skeleton?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Then you got Proxima Midnight, who's his wife.
Yep.
This is her there.
So they're children and they're...
And they're married. Yeah.
Okay.
Now...
Are they actual, like... siblings?
Obviously, none of his children...
Or is this kind of like a...
No,
because all of his children are adopted.
Yeah. Okay. Now, her staff, her power with that staff is she can absorb any energy from any sun nearby and use that power from the staff to take care of people.
Like Starkiller Base in Star Wars.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Now, you got Ebony Maw, I think is his name. And it's this dude here. Now, he has no... superpowers or staff or anything like that, but his special talent is he can say things to you and make you do it.
Interesting.
Now, there's been footage of him over Doctor Strange, obviously in all his little CGI suit, like Doctor Strange on his back and he's hunched over him with his hand on his chest. He could say to Doctor Strange, just give me the stone. You don't need it anymore. What are you going to use it for? I can use... And that's how he convinces you to do things.
Interesting.
You know, so that's his power. And then the other guy, which is Black Dwarf, but I think they're calling him something different.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the movie, Space Hulk.
Space Hulk.
That's the best way to look at me. He's condensed. Yeah. He's condensed like a...
He does look like Space Hulk in this picture.
Apparently, he's condensed like a... Not a fallen star, like an imploding star. You know how it goes smaller?
Yep.
That's what he's like.
A neutron star is what you're thinking of.
Yeah, a neutron star. That's what he's like. That's why he's so tough.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm so excited.
Interesting.
To see what this lot are going to do. Now, it's your choice if you guys want to know. They did show a trailer at D23 for Infinity War. 5 minute long trailer.
Yeah.
I can read to you what was in the trailer unless you don't want to know.
Oh, see. I don't know. Like, on... I'm excited for Infinity War because I feel that Marvel's second phase I feel their second phase was like copy paste of everything. I really thought that.
Gotta remember, this is 10 years leading up to this point now.
Yeah, well, yes, that's right. And I feel that Marvel have essentially kind of gone, okay, we've done basically the same thing over and over. And I feel the argument that Marvel are doing the same thing, although it's still. Legitimate, I think that it's becoming less and less true. I think they are trying to branch out. So the idea of leading into Infinity War, they've been doing all these very different things. I'm excited about the whole thing.
Yeah.
But
maybe I won't read the whole trailer, but can I read the end of it to you? How it finished?
Yeah, go on.
The end of it. Now you gotta remember Thanos only has two stones.
What stones are they?
The purple and the blue one, don't know which ones they
are. So he's got the Tesseract and he's got
He got the Tesseract one in.
He doesn't have the Tesseract. Tesseract's
blue. No, that was the elf. What's it? Malekith? The rage one. That's the red one. Yeah.
The blue and the purple. So Tesseract and the one from Guardians. First one.
Oh, okay. That stone. Yeah.
Yeah. So with the power of only two stones.
Yep.
So apparently all the Avengers are in front of him.
Yep.
With the power of two stones, he grabs a moon. And starts to drag it towards whatever planet the Avengers are on and hurls it at him. Moon.
Interesting.
That's how it ends. And then it just cuts to black.
Wow. Seems like they might go a bit out there, hey? A little bit.
I don't know.
There's a lot more to that, and you guys can read it afterwards. That might explain. But
yeah.
With that being the end of it, him grabbing a moon and hurling it at the Avengers,
yep.
Oh my goodness.
Do you know what I think? I think I need to wait for Thor Ragnarok, because yeah. I think Thor Ragnarok is going to be a big, like, drawing everything together, because obviously the Avengers are based on the Earth.
Yeah.
Like, but then you've got Guardians of the Galaxy out somewhere, and you've got...
And Hulk and Thor.
Yeah, and then you've got Asgard is...
Black Widow.
Somewhere else and all that. So I'm waiting to see what they do with the whole tying the Marvel Universe on Earth with the Marvel Universe out in the rest of the galaxy.
Yeah.
To then see how, like, where and how it goes from there. Yeah.
It's exciting times, man.
It is.
It is exciting times.
Because they've wrapped production on phase one.
Have they really?
Oh, film one, yeah. They did wrapped. Wrap a couple of days ago, didn't it? Wasn't it? Or
a week, yeah, it was a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
Maybe a week by now, but yeah, they've wrapped. So.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it's exciting times ahead, especially for us.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's... very, very exciting. Well, I think we might wrap it up there, unless there's anything else you want to...
I reckon...
nothing I've got. Nah. I think we're just preparing ourselves for future weeks to come and what we want to see.
Exactly.
So
that's right.
So I say we hop back in the time machine.
That's it.
We're gonna disappear again. And next time you'll see us, we'll be talking about Dunkirk as the present. Chris Nolan's...
Apparently it's being called a masterpiece.
Oh, well, we'll save that for the next episode. Beautiful. All right. We will see you next time on Screen Review Time Warp.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.